Golf's no different from hockey. Requires talent, self-discipline.
Golf requires goofy pants and a fat ass. You should talk to my neighbor, the accountant, probably a great golfer, huge ass.
Hi, golf fans. This is Tom Fazio. You are listening...
How do you measure yourself with other golfers?
By height.
It's a very, very special honor.
I'm Paula Creamer, and you're listening...
Well, we're waiting.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, a.k.a. John Kreese from Cobra Kai, and you're listening to...
Quiet, please.
Let the word go out from here across the land. Let Daddy Noonan approve.
Hi, boys. Nice day for golf, eh? Quiet, please. Oh, you got secrets, eh?
Hey, this is Shooter McGavin. You're listening to the...
Quiet, please.
You have found Quiet, Please Golf Podcast. Our inaugural show, episode one. I am Alan DePue, and we have our panel, albeit a little smaller today. People are on the road. People are airborne as we're trying to record on this Wednesday evening. I've got Andy Heidorn, always back. Mr. Heidorn, pleasure to see you, sir.
Back in the saddle.
Bobby Baldessari. We call him Boston. Some people call him Boston Bob. We now call him Bourbon Bob. Bobby.
Coming to you from the Commonwealth of KY.
Commonwealth of KY.
Quiet, please.
Quiet, please. Okay, so here's the rules. New podcast, new branding, a little more cutting edge. Bobby, we've been keeping Andy handcuffed. We haven't allowed him to express his true thoughts. And he was instrumental in saying we needed something. And I said, look, if we're going to have – yeah, he's leaning in. If we're going to do this, we need to have rules. So I've invested in a quiet please sign.
Look at all the
you are timed out, point. Andy, if you start mouthing off too much. It also doubles as a nice paddle.
I like it.
Fair enough.
Well, we needed to get a medical sponsor because if Andy leans in any further, he could have some facial damage to the iPhone there.
All right, so exactly. Folks, in all seriousness, though, we are on Facebook, we are on Twitter, we are on Instagram, we have the new YouTube channel. We're going to be doing the. You're going to actually get to see us. We've hidden behind the camera long enough. You're going to get to see us, and please like, share us with your friends. Give us a 5 rating. As Christian constantly says, we're here for you guys. Want to have some good material, and I think we got some great material because. Brooks Koepka got it done, Andy.
You know what? More power to Brooks Koepka. I mean, he's come all the way back, and he's, you know, he was in the depths of despair, as we all saw in Full Swing. And he's back to the Brooks of 2018.
Stone cold assassin.
Yep. And I'm glad to see it. I mean, he makes golf, professional golf, a better place.
I agree. And so the inevitable before we bring Bobby in was story number 2 out of Rochester. I already know the answer to what you're going to say. Validate Liv, validate Brooks.
It's not even a question to me. It does nothing to validate Liv. Just like... when John Rahm wins the Masters, it does nothing to validate the PGA Tour. It validates the player.
Okay. Bobby's storyline number 2, and we're going to expand on both all of this. A certain PGA golf professional, a club professional, not unlike yourself, made a very impressive showing.
It was a block party, wasn't it? A potty. Michael Block, I mean... played amazing golf to finish in tied for 15th in the PGA Championship, a major on that golf course, the setup, just everything about it. I mean, there's pressure to play well. There's pressure, go win a championship, but man, he excelled. He was amazing. I think he had a great attitude. He connected with everybody. I think he fed off of that sort of like different sports. It was really, really tremendous. It was awesome.
All right, so I'm gonna go there right out of the gate. First cutting edge question: did he get too much limelight, and did it overshadow Brooks and his victory?
Well, here, I mean, my take was he got. I don't think he did. Going into week two, it's a Charles Schwab and on, I think it got into a little overexposure. But during the PGA Championship, I think it was it was just a good feel-good story. It was I think, a good balance. I do want to say, you know, Brooks is amazing. He's like that big game pitcher in Major League Baseball. You know, the Larry Bird, if you will, you know, the
Kurt the big Schilling. Games.
Yeah, Kurt Schilling. I mean, he just thrives on the big stage. I mean, I think he gets bored with regular golf events, but he thrives on the big events, which is really amazing.
Andy, question to you. Overshadow Brooks? No.
Well, I don't think so, because he was a story in and of himself, especially at that event where it's the PGA of America's event, right? And it was a fantastic, to me, a fantastic double story going on at the same time. And I don't think it's worth anybody getting all butthurt about, you know, this guy got too much attention, that guy got too... No. I mean, they were two incredible stories. And I think the way it played out on television and in the media, I think was right the way they did it.
So Bobby, I, a former PGA golf professional, you still a PGA golf professional, as is our other co-host, Mr. Elliott. Unbelievable, impressive, the fact that he was able to even put on the performance that he put on. Would you agree?
Yes and no. I mean, Michael Block has played in tour events. He's played in the U.S. Open. He's played in majors. I forget how many PGA championships he's qualified for. I mean, his day job is teaching golfers. It's grinding. It's long hours. But he's been on that stage enough that I think there was a comfort feeling. But I think there was appropriate amount of amazement, appropriate amount of, wow, this is a cool, great story, makes the cut. He hangs in there on Saturday. If he just shoots a 71 on the last day, I think there's still a little bit of chatter. But he made a hole-in-one. And not only did he make a hole-in-one, he jarred it. I mean, yeah, on the floor, slam dunk. I think that just created a whole nother story on Sunday. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully that it does inspire a lot of PGA members out there to keep working on their game. And you want to grow the game of golf. I went around this country with some business workshops. I said, you want to grow the game of golf, teach and play. That's how you grow the game of golf as a PGA member, to get people inspired to come out, see you playing golf. That will grow the game, even though that's a pathetically overused, nobody knows what it means. Brendan Elling and I go round and around. It just drives me crazy, but that's for another show.
I believe I saw a statistic that he's played in 24 PGA Tour events or something along that line. He's actually played in more tour events than a number of people on the tour. So he is very comfortable in that setting. And look, I'm not trying to take anything away from it. I think it was as a former PGA golf professional, and I remember many times people would say to me, well, why aren't you as good as those guys on tour? You go out there and play with that, and it was usually a 10 handicapper. And I said, well, you know that one round where we maybe play equal to each other? I may be able to do that one round, but over 72 holes, they're going to smoke me. And especially on a golf course, Andy, Oak Hill was looking beautiful.
Phenomenal venue. Phenomenal. Huh? Yeah. I just think that was the perfect setup, the perfect, all around the perfect venue. I was skeptical going in because of the time of year, and they were potentially susceptible to really, really bad weather. But I mean, as it turned out, they had their rain and all that on Saturday. But at the end of the tournament, I mean, that Oak Hill was a tremendous venue for that tournament.
Bobby, you can appreciate that. Northeast Golf, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up outside of Boston like Andy, and I don't know how many Memorial Days. It was 38 degrees. I remember playing – I don't remember which one it was, Andy, but one of the amateur events there, I think in early May one year, and it was snow flurries. So, yeah, you never know what's going to happen up there. But that I've been to Oak Hill. I haven't played it. That's a big boy golf course, big, brawny. It's just big. They did some tree. What's the right word to say where they cut down a lot of trees? But they did some tree
pruning. They were doing aggressive pruning.
Yeah, and, from the ground up.
Yeah, it. I think it added to the look. And I know a lot of amateur golfers out there don't like it. They're tree huggers. I'm an environmentalist to whatever degree. But the more trees on a golf course, it's not so good for the golf course. If you look at old photos of Oakmont, the Oak Hills, of a lot of majestic, wonderful old golf courses in the United States, there were not a lot of trees. Trees start to get planted. You turn around 50 years later. Oh, this is a nice, pretty oak tree. Well, it's covering a green, and the green won't thrive.
That's all back to the to what 50 years ago when the Corps of Engineers or National Wildlife or whatever it was were giving away like, you know, 1,000 trees for $10 or $5 or whatever it was, and everybody planted trees.
Yeah, and I think it used to be part of what the general consensus of a good golf course was, tree lined. And I think that's certainly changed as the years have gone by, and there have been projects. I think the first major one, if I'm not mistaken, was Oakmont and then Oakland Hills in Michigan. Both of those really, really went at it first. And, you know, they just started creating a new way of looking at golf courses and architecture, and certainly for the health of the turf, like Bobby was saying.
Well, see, the first one that comes to my mind is Pinehurst number two. I mean, they went completely a different direction with the whole au naturel, you know, sand hills. When did the other ones make that move?
They were before that. They were before Pinehurst did their redo. Yeah.
Yep.
But they literally removed, like, I think Oakland Hills removed like 3,000 trees.
Jesus.
Yep.
So. Yeah. I also saw an interesting quote. This dates back to what I don't remember which year that Brooks was paired with TW at the Open Championship. Do you know the quote I'm talking about? Where Steve Williams was asked then, and I'm thinking this is like 2015, maybe even before that, Bobby. And he was asked about, you know, Tiger and his game, obviously, and long story short, to paraphrase, he goes, I don't know, but we played with this kid, Brooks Koepka, and I love his ball flight. When he figures out the other components of his game, he will be a force.
Yeah, he was talking about how the ball comes off the club face, like a Rory, like a John Rahm. It just sounds different, like Tiger, the impact, the purity of it. Sound is a big component of teaching the game as well. And sound, Andy will relate to this from his former sales rep days with a certain company that begins with a C. That's part of the sales and marketing. Oh, that sounded good.
No question.
That wasn't the one that goes ping.
No. Over the years, people change, the manufacturers change the acoustics of the clubs, and it has a pretty big kind of effect on how people perceive what's going on.
Well, dude, I stood behind Koepka at Shinnecock during one of the practice rounds. We went out onto the island and ninth hole. And I mean, my God, he takes it. Folks, if you've never stood beside Brooks Koepka when he hits a driver, he takes a rip at that club. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he's... like I said before, I'm glad to see him back. He makes professional golf a more interesting place.
Agreed. So I posed the question. This is now two majors in a row. The top LIV guys, we'll just say, DJ. I mean, we'll throw Phil in there. Phil was respectful, obviously, at Augusta. Brooks, I mean, is there any storyline there? Does this lead right into our LIV report? Can I hold up my sign at this point?
Again, to me, what's the story? I mean, it has nothing to do with LIV, nothing at all. It just happens to be the place that a couple of those players went and signed, right?
Nothing else. And he's like, no, that's pretty much.
No, I mean,
he's just like,
what would the storyline be? Would it be that you know, playing live events gets these guys more prepared to play majors? I mean, bullshit. There's no way that's the case.
Well, I mean, when Brooks himself says that's not the case.
Yeah.
It's just Brooks and Cam Smith and Phil. I mean, they're the cream of the cream. I mean, they're used to being in that, I guess they're used to being in that upper echelon, and they embraced it. I mean, they like to be uncomfortable, and yeah, it's not for everybody up there. And I agree with Andy that it's not a live thing, but it's just showcases what the talent that Koepka has.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would go a step further and say that Koepka joined LIV because he was really worried about his future, about his health, right. About his ability to regain back his health and his playing form.
Yeah, and now he's reassembled all the talent, all the instructors around him that got him to where he was.
Yeah.
And I think, looking ahead to LA, is he the guy to beat?
Yeah.
I
mean, we tend to have these conversations all the time and it seems like a guy will go on a 6 or an 8 month stretch and he seems like he's unbeatable and everybody's picking him for every major, and then somebody else emerges and it's just the way the world of professional golf works. But certainly at this point in time, there's no question in my mind that he'll be either the favorite or Scotty will be the favorite. I mean, they'll be 1 and 2.
Because he's looking impressive also.
And by the way, I can't wait to see LA Country Club. That place is incredible.
Elaborate.
It does look really good. Yeah.
It's Have you just, been there?
Is it no? But it's I've seen enough. They had a Walker Cup out there like 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm telling you, like they have one hole out there that was playing 82 yards.
Oh, I love it!
It I'm telling you, LA Country Club is an amazing golf course.
Well, that goes. I mean, that's like the country club. I love the We Met Hole.
Yep.
I mean, that was cool shit. and you can't tell me it wasn't instrumental. Scheffler made a 6.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, just the way architecture is to have a really short par 3, to have a drivable par 4, risk reward, things like that. I mean, there's a lot of holes out there that are small. They look small on a scorecard, and you go, "Ah, must be birdieable," but they get your attention.
Well, yeah, look at 10 at Riviera.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. In the green at LA Country Club on that par 3, you know, it's a long, skinny green, and that front right pin is the one that's like 80 yards. And like the longest it plays is maybe 120. But it's just an awesome hole. And those guys were up there with wedges trying to figure out how to get it on the green and get a putt at birdie. It's pretty cool. Bobby, it reminds me a little bit of the 9th hole at Myopia.
Myopia. I knew it. Yep. Exactly. Yep. You make a 3 there, you run.
Yep. And how long is that hole? Maybe 105?
I was going to say, that was 99 yards or something like that.
Yeah.
There was Bobby will remember this one. There's a Montclair Country Club. I remember playing high school golf at that place in Dumfries, Virginia. That thing couldn't have been more than 70 yards. Little creek almost all the way around it. And yeah, just get me to the next tee.
Oh, yeah. And interesting at Myopia, the third hole, I think the third hole is like a 240 par 3 or something crazy.
Impossible.
They got two extremes. Both ends there. But yeah, that's what golf's about. It's going to make you think. And it's fun when really good players you know, they're shaking a little bit with a little 99-yard shot.
Yep. Yep. That's some cool stuff to watch. So I can't wait to for the thing I'm most interested in at LA or at the US Open is LA Country Club.
Okay. LIV Golf. Lots going on with LIV Golf. Their surrogates, this is why I asked the question, are lighting up Twitterverse with two of the four major holders are LIV players right now. It validates LIV. It's this, it's that. But LIV is in the news for a lot of other reasons right now. Matter of fact, they were just at Trump down in D.C. I had a lot of friends actually attended. They said it was a good deal. They had fun. It was different.
It's a nice setting.
What's that?
It's a nice setting right on the river. It's pretty.
Yeah. So, Andy, lay us a little LIV report.
The Quiet Please LIV update. So what's in the news now is LIV is starting to talk about relegation in the same respect that they do that for Premier League soccer and some other sport leagues around the world. Relegation just means that if you don't finish in the top of the competitions for the year, you lose your status as a LIV player. And the way they're doing it now is they're saying that the top 24 players out of the 48 total will be kind of safe. And then the bottom 24 the team captains are also safe. But the top 24 and the team captains and whoever finishes below now is going to be relegated. And then they're opening up what they call promotion events where people who won on the DPW Tour, won on the PGA Tour, top like group of world amateur golfers, they all are eligible to play in the promotional event that will earn them a potential spot in 2024 LIV. And to me, I think that's kind of a cool way to do it if in fact LIV was what they think it is, but it's not. It's still, you know, in my mind, it's still a fledgling, you know, thing that they're trying as hard as they can to have it catch on. But I do like the idea. But the other problem is that, you know, you as a player sign a contract, you get suspended from your tour, and then you don't play good enough and you're going to be relegated. Let me just read off a couple of the names of the people who would be relegated if the tour ended today. So Paul Casey, Matt Jones, Sam Horsfield, Mark Leishman, Tom Peters, Abe Anser, Bern Weisberger. Like, those guys are going to be out. I mean, that's changing the rules for the worst.
I'd be pissed.
Yeah.
They're going to show up.
I have money in the bank, but I'd be pissed.
Yeah, they're going to start showing up at state opens.
Well, other people may be showing up there, but we'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, what I heard, and this continues with the whole thing you said probably almost 9 months ago, Andy, which is their entire model is based on the team concept.
Yep.
And I've heard LIV reports, some LIV executives saying how maybe they could have some all-star team. If they want to coexist with the PGA Tour, they could have an all-star team made out of like the top four finishers on the FedEx, and they could compete in the LIV championship. But I've also read that they're going to start designating, and it's all there's lots of speculation, right? It's like hockey. They're changing on the fly. I've also heard they talked about the team concept in cities and having these teams based in a city, and whether or not that city, I guess, becomes a host site for all the LIV teams to come in. Maybe that's how they get, I don't know, the team from Madrid to want to support Sergio and his cast of characters. I don't know. What say you, Bobby?
Well, they get a team in Boston. Wonder what they will name that. you know, I don't know.
The Tea Party.
What's that?
The Tea Party.
The Tea Party. No, no. It's the Tea Party.
Spelled T-E-E.
Yeah, Tea Party. The party. Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole team golf thing with Liz.
Put that shit on a T-shirt. Show the T-shirt.
We should trademark that thing. Wait a minute.
You should.
Time out. Quiet, please. Business meeting. Where was I? Talking about the team. Well, yeah, you know, it's probably not a bad idea. I mean, if you just put Liv on the side and you talk about what they are, if they had teams, it's I know of another how do I word this? So I know of another entity that had thought about that in a different realm, putting professional golfers in teams in cities. So not the first I've heard of it, but, you know, I don't know. It still doesn't, you know, as we said before, I just go, you know, give back to Brooks. He's, if he's on a team, I don't know if he really cares about it. He's just going to gear up for the majors.
Yeah. I still think that the whole concept of the teams being the business model that's going to drive them to financial success, to me, is a complete joke. I just don't ever see that being something that people will grab onto. And look, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel pretty strongly about it, that I just think that at the end of the day, that nobody cares enough about the teams. People care about the players. People care about, you know, does anyone talk about the Smashers and the Range Goats and the, I mean, does anyone
talk
about those?
I hold those in the same esteem as the 27 Yankees, the 04 Red Sox, the great teams from Edmonton back in the 80s.
Yes, the Range Goats.
And effing Range Goat.
Yeah, if they really wanted, I mean, that's the other thing. If they really wanted the value to be in the teams, I mean, those are the worst names. Like it's almost like they're a joke. Like, people are laughing at the names. Like, who's going to invest billions of dollars in the Range Goats? I don't see it.
I always wondered about that with the names. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you would think that their marketing team could come up with at least a... Look, we came up with the Tea Parties, or say it correctly, Bobby, and we did that in like 2.5 seconds.
Yeah. And quiet, please. You know,
I personally think, and I'm into the branding stuff and the, you know, the IP and the trademarks. Like that's something that's always interests me. So I think they were trying too hard to be golf but louder, right? And they end up coming up with these ridiculously, like, cheesy names for their teams.
They wanted to take the Waste Management 16th hole and brand it across their entire concept. That's it.
Bro. Yeah, it's going from one extreme that works really, really well once or twice a year to a steady diet, which is really, really not appetizing for the golfers.
Right. So this week is the Memorial designated event. And Jack, we'll get to Jack's comment in a minute. But designated event, everybody is always there anyway to pay homage to Jack. But now there's a lot of money on the line. But you don't have that from the last two events or whatever the case. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's every once in a while. You're spoon feeding the public the higher quality event, as opposed to, I guess, all the time that they think they have.
No, I don't think they think that. I honestly, I think there's a balancing act between having events on a weekly basis, supporting communities that have supported the PGA Tour, and then having a schedule of designated events that the players have to play in. The PGA Tour has been doing that for 40 years.
Right.
But it's just, I think everybody agrees at the end of the day that you can't produce Masters or a Players Championship every week. You can't do it, right? So choose your spots, have your events, and you know, those off weeks, those weeks that aren't designated events are usually, you know, in places that are heavily supported by the community. They still appreciate everything that's going on. And the LIV people love to compare those events to their events, right? But again, you can't duplicate all that stuff on a weekly basis. You just can't produce it.
Yeah, if you look at Major League Baseball, NHL, NBA, you get long seasons. There might be, what, a couple of dozen fun, important games you get up for. In NFL, you know, the shortened season, it's a little bit different. But, yeah, the golf with some 40-something events a year, it's just mentally, physically, everything, it'd be really, really tough to be able to be up for every week. I mean, you just can't do it. So on the one hand, yeah, I mean, I always figured it like this. If you put on the greatest event you could possibly put on at my club, people are going to want to be there. I'll worry about what I can control.
Yeah. Yeah. Know your place.
Yeah.
Andy, don't be that guy.
Boy, do we have a great
segue. Know your place.
Yeah. Boy, do we have a great Don't Be That Guy this week. I'm sure some of you have heard this, but for those that haven't, hold on to your britches here. So there is a big money scramble being played in recent weeks. I don't even know exactly when it was. But it turns out that one of the teams had a ringer. And it was like a $20,000 cash prize for the winning team.
Big, massive Calcutta involved. That's the other key to that. Massive Calcutta.
And lo and behold, one of the teams had a guy from Kentucky named J.B. Holmes on their scramble team with, I want to say, an 8 handicap. So, really? Really, J.B. Holmes? I mean,
five-time winner.
I mean, Ryder Cup player, President's Cup player, and you got to go, like, participate in a scam like that? Like, that's unbelievable.
Bobby, what do you got? Thoughts?
That is wicked weird. I mean, I've played in state opens with – 4 players that were on and off. Bill Mallon, he's a doctor now. Jeff Lewis, Dana Quigley, you know, over the years in New England, these state opens, you know, that's sort of one thing. But the scramble thing is like, wow, that's really weird.
Yeah, I remember, you know, Robert Wren, who just fired 27 under at the Buick, shows up at the Signet Virginia State Open the next week or something like that. I mean, come on.
That's one thing. But the thing that makes this to Don't Be That Guy is – they tried to hide who he was.
And I hear that the reason he found him out is they were like one hole behind.
I want to know if that's a joke or that's the real thing.
I don't know if it's true or not.
Because that's a great joke. That's a great J.B. Holmes joke.
2 or 3 beers in, he could have been. I mean.
Yeah. It's a great J.B. Holmes joke. But is that not the perfect Don't Be That Guy for the Quiet Please opener?
That's perfect.
Yeah. Crazy.
So, boys, what else we got going on in the golf world? I'll tell you what we got going on. LPGA is in Jersey next week. They're in Jersey this week. Great event. up at Liberty National, combining top, I think it's 72 of the LPGA's top players and a bunch of amateur players, and Michelle Wee's involved somehow in this. And I think it's her, she's actually the sponsor, and that's great. But we're giving our shout out in episode one with, you know, our favorite LPGA tour player that we're rooting for, Samantha Wagner. She'll be at Seaview. She'll be at Seaview next week, Andy.
Yep.
I'll be down there in the gallery with my little media credentials.
And don't forget Alexa too.
Oh, and Alexa. Don't. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Friends of the show.
Friends of the show.
I did see that Jessica Korda took a undefined leave of absence from the tour with a back injury. Ooh. I read that this week, which is kind of sad. Her sister had a similar sabbatical last year.
So we always talk about the 18th hole and final thoughts. So I'm going to leave it a little more open this time, that we can have a little longer time to randomness, because we haven't seen each other in a few weeks. Because I got a couple of them. One is down next to you, Mr. Heidorn. Kudos to Houston. Texas Children just signed as a sponsor for the tour event down there, I believe.
I didn't even hear that.
Dude, I'm keeping up with news in your town.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. That's why I come here every Wednesday night.
And I believe they're moving it back to the spring.
I did know that.
Yes. And then news point number two, I so wish Christian was here. Ricky Fowler. Slick Rick.
What about Slick Rick?
Open Championship qualified.
Oh, awesome.
His T6 last week gets him in.
That's awesome.
Christian's going to be wicked happy.
Wicked happy. Andy, what do you got?
So I want to talk a little bit about college golf.
All right. Let's.
Me being an ex-college golfer, and I tend to follow the college game a little bit. And the NCAA finals were being played today. I think it's going on as we speak. And it's Florida and Georgia Tech, I believe, in the finals. But the thing that I wanted to bring up, and it's happened in the other sports too. A few years ago, Pepperdine won the national championship.
I recall.
Sahith Theegala was on the team, and Dylan Monante was one of their better players. Well, Dylan Monante now was playing for the number one ranked North Carolina Tar Heels, who got eliminated in the semifinals yesterday. But it's a little bit odd to me that this kid who played for Pepperdine just decides on a whim that he's going to transfer somewhere else and then go end up playing, you know, in the national championship. That does not sit well with me at all. I just don't, you know, this whole transfer portal thing in college sports to me is I understand why it's there. I understand why it's been kind of loosened up a little bit, but I don't know. It just doesn't seem right to me.
Well, the most noteworthy one right now is Coach Dion talking about transfer portal. Colorado, since Deion Sanders is going there, 71 kids have entered the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like on the way out?
Yeah, I believe on the way. Transfers, key stats. Colorado has had 71 players enter the transfer portal since last August, causing a stir about what's happening. And then it goes on, there's article upon article upon article, and basically Deion's forming a team through transfer portal.
Well, like free agency.
Yeah.
Well, that's my whole point, Bobby. It's like Dylan Menante, he free agented himself to North Carolina. And in my school, South Florida, we had this kid, Luke Gifford, who had played for us for 3 years. He's playing for Pepperdine in the national championship now. They got eliminated in the quarterfinals, but it just doesn't seem right to me. Yeah. Maybe I'm being old, but it just doesn't seem right to me.
It's definitely a new way with the college sports. I think I know what they were trying to do, but you just know that there's going to be some gaming the system.
Well, and how do you that's secondary compared to, and by the way, I'm not opposed to the athletes, but how about Olivia Dunn? She's making how many millions of dollars a year with her NILs and or Bronny James and all these other players that are out there.
Yeah.
Livy Dunn, though, I mean, she's just an Instagram model, you know?
She is. Happens to be a gymnast sometimes.
Correct. It's like Paige Spraniak, right? You know, just happens to be in the golf game. Yeah.
Looked like the gopher on Caddyshack.
I know, Hillary, right? Different.
We're on YouTube now, so people can actually see that.
Wait till they see my moves.
Yeah.
that'll get a one rating right there. All right, Bobby. Andy, I don't disagree with you. I mean, it's just weird. It really is. You make a commitment to a team. Whatever happened to the days of, you know, yeah, fine. If you're going to transfer, you transfer. But you don't transfer and immediately start. You have to have that sit-out period. You have to have, you know. So basically, they're forming super teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's your reason for transfer? Like,
I want to win.
To me, there used to be a committee that would kind of hear the reason for transfers, and they would rule on when somebody had to, you know, sometimes I believe they would let them not have to skip a year. If their reason wasn't really valid, then they'd make them sit out a year.
Agreed. Bobby?
All right, so I'm going to leave you with this thought as a way to bring myself off the sports ledge of watching my Celtics just be so embarrassing. Oh my goodness. You know, there was nothing like a 9-hole round of golf, literally at sunset. And I got to thinking that there's a lot of people are going to play golf through the day, and that's great. And depending on their travel and their schedule and this and that. But I think the most magical time to play golf is at sunset. I played it at both ends, opened the shop, played in the morning. There's something really pure and special about a morning round of golf. But I would gather to say, anybody listening out there, your best memories of golf, how many times has it been late in the day, last shot, sun's going down, you almost can't see where the ball is going? Like, it's really, really special. I'm out in Kentucky now, the sun's going down at like 9:30 at night. It's just really, really special. I don't know, I just, hopefully people out there can, if you're trying to think about playing golf through the day, start thinking about, the twilight. Even if you got 3 or 4 holes in, it's better than nothing. And there's just something really, really, I can't find the word, but it's just really something special to play golf as that sun's going down.
Well, I can offer my opinion. First of all, coffee with Bailey's is not as good as a transfusion.
or bourbon.
Or bourbon. Just saying. So I'll take the long shadows of a late afternoon round.
Yeah.
In my transfusion.
Let me just add to that story, because there's a great story about Jack Nicklaus, the first time he broke 70. I forget, he was probably like 4 years old or whatever, but he was playing with his dad, and they had to be home for dinner, and I think he had maybe 5 holes to play or something like that. And his dad told him that we're going to go home and eat, because that's what we're supposed to do. And if we have time, we'll go back to Scioto and see if we can finish the round. And he ended up shooting 69, his first time he ever broke 70. And I believe he was maybe 13 or 14 years old, but yeah, at that serene time of the night, being able to play golf out there is really special. I agree, Bob.
You just see the course, all the contours are just, they come to life. It's really, really special.
Yeah.
I got one final one. Okay. Conversation pops up in the golf shop today. And I know, and I'm not picking on the kid, but I'm just going to point out maybe our age. I said something about who's Hogan. And I got a blank stare.
Don't be that young guy.
And the response was Hulk.
Oh God.
I said, who's Donald Ross? And they're like, doesn't he make clothing?
Yep. Quiet, please. You're not allowed to say anything.
I guess we can't expect golf bros to know much about the history and characters of the game, right?
But soon they will. Yep. And on that note,
nice.
You only have one opportunity to sell your golf property. Shouldn't you partner with an expert that offers you 30 plus years of golf industry experience combined with the reach of a global leader in real estate? Colliers International Golf Brokerage and Advisory Services understands your unique business needs. Whether it is brokerage, management, and consulting, be reassured that the market leader in the business of golf is providing you the real answers and practical solutions you deserve. Contact Golf Talk Live co-host and Colliers Golf Advisory Services member Alan DePew today at 717-554-8519. That's 717-554-8519.